Okay, no problem. Well, good evening, Mayor and Assembly members, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Brianna Walker. I'm the campaign coordinator for San Juan Beyond Borders, and I'm joining you today from Occoquan, Minchingadan East, ancestral and present homeland of the Occoquan Tsleil peoples in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you for allowing me to speak again this evening, and I would like to thank you for your continued and ongoing support in this effort to defend our shared wild salmon rivers and way of life. I ask you to please vote in favor of resolution number 10-21-16-16, strongly supporting efforts to protect transboundary waters, specifically the Stikine River, and the ecosystem, indigenous people, communities, residents, and economies that depend on its health. Resolution 10-21-16-16 builds on the strong letters and resolutions focused on the protection of Alaska BC transboundary rivers submitted to U.S., Canadian, and British Columbia governments from all sectors of Alaska and the U.S. over the last 7 years, including the powerful resolution passed by the City of Borough Wrangell in 2017, which called for the enforcement of the Boundary Waters Treaty and the development of binding international protections and financial assurances. Yet despite these concerns that have come from tribes, communities, and lawmakers downstream for close to decades, BC is still permitting, developing, and operating large-scale open pit mines, including large earthen mine waste dams, or tailings dams, at the headwaters of shared rivers, without the meaningful input of those communities and tribes downstream in Alaska, and despite a global push to ban earthen mine tailings dams. As of October 19th, the following tribes and municipalities have passed resolutions with the same asks included as the resolution that you are considering this evening: an immediate temporary pause on the permitting of new mines and the expansion of existing mines until an international agreement is in place, and a permanent ban on tailings dams along Alaska BC transboundary salmon rivers. The Wrangell Cooperative Association of Alaska, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, Sitka Tribe of Alaska, Craig Tribal Association, the Organized Village of Cake, the City and Borough of Petersburg Assembly, the Sitka Assembly, the Gustavus City Council, the Craig City Council, Kanapee City Council, Pelican City Council, and the Saxon City Council have all passed these resolutions. Copies of a few of these were included in the meeting packet for your review. Thank you, Lisa, for doing that. Additionally, several dozen prominent community members, local regional businesses, commercial fishing organizations have signed onto a community resolution of support, and over 150 individual Alaskans have signed onto a letter to President Biden asking for the same temporary pause on new mining activity and a permanent ban on tailings dams along the Taku, Stikine, and Unic rivers. As is reflected in this resolution, these rivers, in particular the Stikine, are hot spots of biodiversity. They burn all five species of wild Pacific salmon and serve as economic powerhouses, contributing $48 million annually to Southeast Alaska's economy and almost $20 million in labor income towards Southeast Alaska's annual multi-billion dollar fishing and visitor industry. Historically, these three rivers produce 80% of Southeast Alaska's king salmon. However, in 2017, the Unic River Kings were listed by Alaska Department of Fish and Game as stocks of concern, and most recently, the Board of Fish has recommended that the Taku and Stikine River Kings be listed as stocks of concern as well.
Brianna, sorry, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to wrap up, please.
Great, thank you. I just say the community of Wrangell is particularly at risk given its proximity to the mouth of the Stikine, and I ask you to please join your neighbors in Southeast Alaska and pass this resolution to defend the rivers that feed us. Thank you so much for your time this evening and the opportunity to speak again.
Thank you so much, Brianna. I really appreciate that, and I'm sorry I had to cut you off. I apologize. Just trying to keep her flowing here. Mr. Olson, are you on the line, sir?
Yes, sir.
Would you please go ahead?
Kiskansi, Hinojikyong. In the Haida language, my name means place of one's own, and I'm Frederick Olson, Jr. I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. We're a coalition of 15 of Southeast Alaska's federally recognized tribes, and the Wrangell Cooperative Association is one of our members. And as we're speaking right now, the Tulsiqua Chief Mine continues to pollute the Taku River watershed. And it's a real cautionary tale to what we're talking about tonight and the resolution that we're co-sponsoring with Salmon Beyond Borders. You know, the Tulsiqua Chief amounts to a mud puddle. It's an example of acid rock drainage, but it's nothing in comparison to what we're calling, you know, the tailings dam, the earthen tailings storage facility, like the one at the Red Chris mine, which is right upstream from Wrangell, and it's operating right now. The earthen dam is 341 feet tall, which is a little over half as tall as the Space Needle in Seattle. A lot of people have heard of the Mount Pauley disaster. This Red Chris has the same design, just on a much bigger scale. The Mount Pauley mine had a tailings dam that was 130 feet high, and when it failed, it became the largest pollution mining disaster in Canada's history. And if that wasn't bad enough, the Red Chris, we have to be watching these for hundreds of years. They're supposed to last for hundreds of years to keep the water over the acid rock. And the one in Mount Pauley was designed to last forever, but it lasted fewer than 20 years. And the reason was, you'd call it a result of climate change. The experts hadn't considered that the dam was to be built on glacial silt. And so one day a big section just slipped out like if you were to slip on a banana peel. What's on the horizon, a lot of people know it as the KSM mine, the Kerr Sulfurous Mitchell project. It's another gold mine dwarfing the size of the Pebble mine, which scares most people, you know, both the Biden administration, the Obama administration, and even the Trump administration were all against the Pebble mine and how devastating of an impact it could have on our way of life and the environment. But the KSM mine, which was threatening the Unic River down by Ketchikan and the Nass River in BC, would dwarf that with waste management. It would have two of these earthen tailings dams, both of them over 100 feet taller than the Space Needle. And again, they have to be out there for hundreds of years, and we just have to hope for the best. You know, these companies would be long gone. There aren't too many companies that have been around hundreds of years, and very few mining companies.
Fred, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to wrap up, okay? 30 seconds, sir.
Yep, that's why we're against the ban on tailings dams and the pause. You know, the games and the rules in Canada have changed a lot with them adopting the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and they need to speak with so-called downstream people or could be impacted. And so that's the other reason we're asking for the pause. While the rules have changed, they need to pause and figure everything out. Thank you for your interest, and Wrangell's always been very interested in this topic. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time tonight. Joe, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
We've got you just fine, Joe. Please go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll try to be real quick. You've heard some really good remarks thus far, and I know that Brenda is to follow, so I'll go quickly. Good evening, City and Borough of Wrangell Assembly members and Mayor. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. As the mayor alluded to, my name is Jill Weiss, and I'm the campaign director for Salmon Beyond Borders. I also join you this evening from Occoquan and Tlingit-Ani, the ancestral and present homelands of the Occoquan Tlingit people in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you, Wrangell, for your continued and ongoing support in our work to defend our shared wild salmon rivers and way of life. Prior to my work with Salmon Beyond Borders, I served as a compliance and enforcement officer for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. I was tasked with inspecting mines throughout our great state. Mining has been an important component of Southeast Alaska's economy in particular, but we aren't talking about mines like those that we have here in Southeast. We're talking about mines, massive mines, in British Columbia. As you've heard from both Fred and Bree, and you might hear from others this evening, the BC mining industry has only accelerated their efforts to garner investments for what they have branded as the Golden Triangle, and this has been accelerating since Alaskans began tracking this modern-day gold rush. And while we are also, of course, advocating for the wild salmon and communities that depend on the Taku and the Yunik, unfortunately, the majority of BC mining industry's Golden Triangle falls within the Stikine River watershed. In the Iskay River, of course, the largest tributary to the Stikine River, nearly the entire riparian corridor and 54% of the lower river watershed are covered by BC mining tenures that overlap with rearing, migrating, and spawning habitat for salmon. This is in addition to the already operating Red Chris mine and the mega projects like that at Glort and Shaft Creek, which are proposed projects in the Stikine watershed. It's important to highlight that BC is not required to consider cumulative impacts when permitting mining projects. So should these aforementioned projects move forward, there could be multiple earthen tailing dams, each towering over the other, as Fred alluded to, ranging from 340 feet to almost 800 feet in the region, with 541 feet at the Galore Creek mine. Legislation in BC is not in alignment with best international standards regarding safety of mine waste storage, nor is it equal to that of which we adhere to and are required to adhere to in the state of Alaska. It's absolutely critical that the community of Wrangell support the ask for a temporary pause on the permitting of new mines and the expansion of existing mines until an international agreement is in place. Furthermore, with the notion that BC's own experts predict two tailing failures every 10 years, and the potential for the Stikine to house three of the region's largest dams, each rivaling the size of the proposed double mine in Bristol Bay, again, it is absolutely critical that the community of Wrangell support the ask for a permanent ban on tailing dams in Southeast Alaska's largest salmon-producing rivers that we share with BC. The Taku, the Stikine, and the Yunik rivers need us, and we need these rivers. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate that. Brenda, you want to come up? Thank you.
Thank you guys for taking a moment to hear me. I'm just a Wrangell resident and a business owner, and my lifestyle and my living are all pretty much tangled up with the Stikine River. And I'm here tonight to ask you to support this resolution. I believe that for all of us here, whether you're a fisherman, a healthcare worker, a teacher, or a boat repair person, pretty much probably a little bit of Stikine River water runs through about everything we do here in Wrangell. I don't think this community would exist at all if it wasn't for the remarkable richness and bounty of the Stikine. It's a fragile ecosystem, and a lot of the folks that have spoken before me have spoken articulately about these mines and the tailings dams. What do we know? They're massive, and unless you've seen it, you wouldn't believe their size. It's incredible and scary that they are just upstream from us. What else do we know? These same mining companies have a pretty deplorable track record for taking responsibility for previous messes that they've made. And we really, we have a lot to lose, and they kind of have a lot to gain and really not a lot to lose. And I feel like we need a place at the table, and I feel like this resolution will help bring us closer to using the treaty to put some teeth in the agreements that might put us downstream stakeholders. We just need a voice, and I ask you to join your other communities as our leaders to make this a priority for Wrangell and support this resolution.
Thank you, Brenda. I appreciate that very much. Is there anyone else in the audience tonight that wanted to speak to this issue?
Mr. Mayor,
yeah.
If I could just let the listening public know, there were three pieces of testimony that were submitted via email, and those were provided to the assembly as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Oh, I'm sorry, two. Excuse
two. Okay, thank you.
Apologize.
Okay, I appreciate everyone that gave some testimony tonight. Thank you all very much. And for the folks on the phone, we really appreciate you calling in and participating in this. Lisa, do you want to take us a little bit on your the draft that you've put forward? And I don't know if there's anything you want to highlight, and then I'll open it up to questions from the assembly.
I'm sorry, let me just scroll to that.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. My apologies, this is taking a little bit of time.
Do you want a page number, Lisa?
I have it. It's,
okay.
I'm scrolling. I'm sorry. I'm almost there.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess so. You can give me the page number and I'll...
The page number is page 248 is the first page of it.
248, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, wait a minute. That was the second one. I was looking at the other ones. Ours is on... ours is on 240. Nope, it's a long one. It's on 239. If you want to follow along...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yep, no problem. So, sorry, I was calling out sick is there. I apologize.
That's okay. Not my fault for not being on the right page here. So what we've done is we've taken aspects from previous resolutions that have been passed, and then I went out and sourced material from ADF&G and from other places to make sure that I had the most relevant fisheries data that I could get, and then I took some additional information, a considerable amount of information from the draft resolution or the example resolution that that Salmon Beyond Borders and SAITC provided to us. And then this most recent round, I took a look at some information that Petersburg had and put it in there. And basically what we do is we call attention to the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909. We talk about specifically in May of 2016, the Auditor General from British Columbia issued a report stating that compliance and enforcement activities of the mining sector are inadequate to protect the province from significant environmental risk. That's the province's own Inspector General reviewing their environmental situation and saying it's not adequate. What was very eloquently stated to you before is the number of large open pit mines with huge tailings dams, not only in place currently on the tributaries and the watershed of the Stikine, but also what is planned. And that is, it's just adding to the potential risk for us here. As Brenda Yeager said tonight, there is not one aspect of life in Wrangell that is in place that isn't tied in some way, shape, or form to the Stikine River. If you look down on the second page of the resolution, I specifically say, whereas the health of salmon species within the watershed is already at risk, as identified in the most recent Southeast Alaska Regional Fisheries Management Plan, where data through 2018 shows Chinook salmon escapements from 2016 to 2018 were between 25% and 48% below escapement goals and between 63% and 74% below upper escapement goals. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has a plan to list Chinook salmon in the Stikine River as a stock of concern. We're already at risk, and everybody knows that. So I think the other thing that I've added specifically is the information regarding the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. That's been added in here. That added additional robust language. The other robust language that's in here that everybody else has adopted in the resolutions that Brianna talked about is a temporary ban on permitting development and expansion. The other item that I will tell you here, in addition to those items, the language actually said exploration. And I'm going to be honest, I specifically took exploration out because I feel like, although we need to make sure that the adequate protections are in place, mining is an integral part of the needs of the folks worldwide for a variety of reasons. And I think exploration needs to be able to continue. I do think things need to be in place prior to permitting and development and operation of those mines. But as has already been said, mining in Southeast Alaska is a huge portion of our economy. It is in BC as well, but it needs to be done safely. And it's not being done the same way that stuff is permitted in Alaska and in the United States, frankly. So that's why all of these things are in here. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to try to address those.
Any questions from the assembly? I just want to say something. I had an opportunity, well, it was part of my job years ago, to go up. We were looking for new areas for crossings to go into. And we did for a while. We worked out at the old Johnny Mountain site down on the Iskut, and then the kids would paddle the Iskut down. And I've seen firsthand how mines are left in Canada. And I'm here to tell you, it was insane. This was shortly after the shutdown, and they literally walked away. We would go into a building, and there would still be the beakers inside the lab with Bunsen burners and rain gear still suspended. It was like they just disappeared. And over the course of 3 years or 4 years, I watched that tailings pond drain down the side of the mountain. The tailings pond was located, I believe, about 3,500 feet, Brenda, somewhere in there, where this strip was. And it was this unreal turquoise color that was just unnatural. It reminded me of Lake Louise in Alberta. And it was just filled with all the minerals. And this was all draining down into the Iskut, down into the Stikine, and out the front. And the story that I was told by the man that operated the camp, because we were utilizing their helicopters, was that they had $1 million bond or something for the cleanup. And it was just easier to run all the equipment that they'd taken in there in the Bristols and up with the hovercrafts. They ran them into the mountain and they cemented the shafts shut. And there's all this equipment in there with oils and hydraulic fluids and everything. And they put, I've seen it with my own eyes, pressure gauges so they could monitor the pressure because all the water builds up in behind and hopefully it doesn't blow the plug out. But that's how they disposed of the equipment. And it was just disgusting. And so I am going to be voting in favor of this. And I thought Brenda did a great job of basically pointing out we are all related to that river. And it is the reason we are here in so many ways. So that's all I want to say on it. Anybody else?
This reads, just one thing.
Yep.
This reads much better, Lisa. Good job on it, I think.
Thank you. There were a lot of hours that went into putting this together appropriately. So I hope it does the job that it needs to.
Well, and I appreciate that we took it and made it Wrangell, and that was really the message from the assembly. Mm-hmm. We are one of the communities that is directly affected by this. So when this goes out, it's got to come from the heart, and I really feel like this does. Great, Lisa. Thank you. And to everybody that was came and spoke on this tonight, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. If there's nothing else, we'll call the roll on this, please.
Assembly Member Dalrymple?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
Seaborg?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Ryan Howe?
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's a first.
I know, that is the first. That's a wholehearted, yes. Okay. Item 13A, discussion item, emergency ordinance number 1012, school superintendent Burr's request to consider amending the ordinance to add an exemption for the school district. There's no motion on this. So, Lisa, what I'll do is maybe get you to do a little preamble, and then we'll ask the superintendent to come up and speak to the item, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The superintendent has requested that the assembly revisit the ordinance as written, that because it includes intrastate testing, what that does is it puts a significant, it's a significant impact, especially on the students traveling for school sports, because those that are unvaccinated, if they have to quarantine and test, then they aren't able to go back and forth without, they're not able to come back to school, obviously, if they've traveled and are unvaccinated, to be able to meet the specific requirements of the ordinance that's in place. And the way that the agenda statement is written, administration is recommending to the assembly to not take action to amend the ordinance, but rather to recognize that our ordinance is written without any enforcement in it, and so that if there is a body or an organization like the school district that has their own policies written, that we will not be coming and enforcing on them, saying, I'm sorry, you're not following our policy, you must do this. And what is concerning to us as administration is that we have written these ordinances, or the one ordinance now, to follow CDC guidelines. And we feel like we would be putting the administration and potentially the assembly at risk if we say it's okay to do something outside of those guidelines and something bad were to happen. If another entity has their own mitigation plan and their own testing protocol and follows that, then, and that's outside of our ordinance, then we are not at risk for having, let's say, said that something, endorsed something, I guess, that I would say that's outside of CDC guidelines. So it's a bit of, it's a bit of protection for the assembly and for the administration, the EOC, and it's recognizing the fact that we don't have any enforcement teeth in our ordinance, and so we're asking people to do what the CDC guidelines are, but people certainly are free to do what they want to do. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I assume that the superintendent has some comments, and we do also have a letter here from a member, a family that bridges both Petersburg and Wrangell and has children going back and forth and has some concern about
okay. that. Thank you. Superintendent Burr, please come on up.
For the record, this is Bill Burr. I am the superintendent of the Wrangell Public Schools. I did submit a letter, and it does deal with Emergency Ordinance 1012. When the Wrangell School District created its mitigation plan, it took the Ordinance 1006 into consideration so that we could follow what the city and borough had asked us to do and to follow what our travel protocol is. Before school had started, due to athletics and knowing that those students would be traveling, we implemented our own testing program. That was using the local facilities for testing, both weekly as well as before and after travel. We are now doing that testing in the school itself by our athletic director. So we are testing our students in athletics weekly and continuously during seasons. What we are going to face, especially with the indoor season coming up, is our regionals and state tournaments are 1 week apart. If we have a athlete that's participating in a team event and they travel to regionals and are successful in being able to go to state, they would not be able to. They would not be able to practice. They would not be able to attend school, even though they were participating in our testing program. We have been using antigen tests, but now we are capable of doing PCR tests, which are a rapid test for our athletes. From the school, we also have, and I wrote in my letter, and just for informational items, 11-year-olds do not meet. They are the magic middle. They cannot follow the testing protocols of their parents, as is in place for 10-year-olds and below, as well as any 12-year-olds that are not 12 long enough at this standpoint so that they could test. So our we want the borough to be aware that that is that affects a grade, at least a grade and a half of all of our students at the school having that that gap. We want to, we've done, I would think, a very thorough job of having a mitigation plan, of following the CNC guidelines, and we encourage that the borough not allow us to have a loophole except to our athletes that we are testing on a regular basis in our mitigation plan. And if allowed, I would like to make a personal comment and to thank Borough Manager Van Barden, who I talked to before I took this position and has helped me transition to Wrangell and has helped the school district. And I wanted to thank her as this is her last meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the superintendent while he's up? Yep, go ahead, Brian.
So you said Trista's doing PCR and molecular testing, and they're both rapid tests?
Antigen testing.
Sorry.
Is a rapid test. The PCR, we use Q Health, which is a 15-minute PCR test.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Dee Dee, would you like to come up, and I know you've been involved in this as well. Would you like to come up and say anything on this item?
Anything on this item? I just want to point out, just for clarification, the existing ordinance doesn't restrict folks from coming back to school. They can come back to school if they do have a negative test. I think that was worded incorrectly a bit ago. All travelers should submit a negative test prior to coming in, and they would not be required to quarantine. I also want to just kind of re-speak some of the words that were brought to our community from, I believe it was Michelle Nace, who spoke about students traveling or anyone traveling, unvaccinated people should quarantine after traveling domestically. I know that was a question that had come up during the school board meeting when they brought in the state DHSS for discussion about COVID-19. And just the importance of our testing. We put our testing protocol or testing ordinance in place because the state of Alaska and the numbers were blowing up. And to protect our own community, we had that in place as our like first line defense, along with our mass vaccinations. We recognize a lot of folks can't get vaccinated. And so we implemented that, and I appreciate that. Not everyone's following that. We get that. And some organizations have their own plan in place. but we put it out there as best practices. We're following CDC guidance, and we put it forward. This is what CDC guidance recommends. This is what state DHSS healthcare workers recommend. This is what our recommendation is for the protection of our own community. There are some little pieces like our 11-year-olds that are in a tough position in that. However, everyone's eligible to test. They may not be eligible to get vaccinated. I think the school, you know, they are doing some testing. They're doing great testing. I know there's a lot. My own kid is a student athlete, and he tests all the time. Antigen testing is more so for surveillance testing, and they're continuing to do that all the time. So they do have a pretty good plan in place, I feel like. But I don't know that it's it would be the EOCU's recommendation to adjust our travel ordinance because they have a good plan in place. And again, we're putting forward what we feel like are best practices.
So, Captain Spree, the question I have is just on antigen testing. Mm-hmm. I find this interesting. My understanding is that antigen testing is best for symptomatic individuals, that actually asymptomatic antigen testing is a bit of a misleader, and you may miss cases because you rely on antigen testing when you really should be having a PCR test. They're totally different.
Okay.
And that it's really not the gold standard. Do you know, is this kind of something that's going on in the state now, or?
The state started that antigen testing last year. It was easy. They had kits that they could do within the school. They had the machines for it. They were able to go ahead and test, you know, a couple, I think it's 15 or 30 minutes. They have the machines to be able to do that. But that is correct. Antigen testing is kind of used as surveillance only and can very much so be misleading. They do, though, have a lot of home tests that the state is also promoting that organizations, including schools, can use to try to ease the burden of PCR testings through the like the hospital and local public health and such. So,
thank you. Some number how?
I mean, I have a lot of questions, but I don't know if it's necessarily for you. It's more comments about our ordinance, so I can wait.
Okay. Some number how?
So, you're doing PCR testing, is that right?
We're doing both.
Okay, so.
Sorry, can I have you move back to the podium?
Well, just because people can't hear. This is for her.
Oh, this is for her. Musical chairs.
Okay, so you're telling me that a student tests negative at this other test, they are eligible to go right back to school and no problems, even with our mandate?
With our PCR test.
Okay, so if the school's doing that, why are we here asking and questioning this now?
The school is doing PCR testing. The school can follow their own.
Well, I think the question, maybe you didn't quite understand his question. It's because you have to wait X number of days to get the test back on a PCR test.
Okay, so the PCR test is not rapid.
Well, it can be, but typically you don't test the rapid if there's somebody is not right. Dee Dee, go for it.
So I think that the issue is our ordinance is written as you will test 72 hours prior to your departure to Wrangell. And the school is doing all kinds of testing. Then they take off and travel for sports. This isn't for your average kiddo who just went on a vacation. This is more towards athletes. That's how this conversation, I do believe, began, and that's the highlight. So they travel for sports, and then they're coming back into the community, and they have to show a negative test before coming back into the community. And so that was what that start. That's where that conversation began.
Or test when you arrive, but quarantine until then, until you get the results.
Unless
you're vaccinated, which many of them
correct.
Are not.
There are many of our student athletes who are vaccinated, but there are a number of them that aren't. And so if they test upon arrival, then as the ordinance is written and the schools, you know, following to a T, then it would be to remain out until they receive the negative test and test again 5 days after. So that's where that is.
They can ostensibly be traveling again by then, actually, and start the whole process, you know, all over again, the whole cycle.
Assemblymember Howe, is this for Dorianne, or is this just your own comments?
Sorry, I raised my pen. Was not a thing. I was just going to say, like, it takes several days for turnaround, but you already covered it. So
okay, sounds good. Dave, did that answer that for you?
I think the issue is that they'll miss several days of school. If they're not vaccinated and they're waiting for a PCR test, they'll miss several days of school and then also travel. And then best practice is they miss the days of school before they got their they get tested, stay home, and then travel, right?
No.
Okay. That's good.
They're doing these kids are doing so much testing. If they were symptomatic, they would be at home. Yes. Are you talking an athlete who just traveled and came home?
Yeah. So, like, before they travel, they have to have a pre-travel test within 72 hours, right? Is that before they leave Wrangell or before they come back to Wrangell?
That's a school okay. situation. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the ordinance right here. That's all.
72 hours prior to your departure to Wrangell,
Okay.
So if you were coming from Petersburg and you want to come to Wrangell, we'd like to see that you tested 72 hours prior to coming to Wrangell. Uh-huh. You can come right in.
Got it.
Come on in.
Assemblymember Powell.
Did we not have this ordinance in place last year?
Yep. Same one.
So, Mr. Burr, I know if you want to come up here, I guess, but...
Well, actually, you need to, because okay. I have the microphone, so thank you. Microphone.
So I know that you weren't here last year, but my question is, what did the school district do last year for the same situation? Do we know?
From my understanding, they didn't travel.
Yeah.
So they didn't travel at all last year? Yes, they did.
We did. Very little, though.
Oh, wrestler
went
to Juneau. I know that.
It's a weird timing. Like,
fall sports
didn't travel.
Spring they did,
but
maybe
right.
Do we have our ordinance in place?
There was a gap
spring?
There.
There was a gap.
Yeah.
Looking good.
Okay, I'm going to kind of bring it back in just a bit, tighten it up a bit. I just don't want to get too much crosstalk. Do you have anything else?
Nope.
And I just wanted to, from the school's point of view, before the students travel, they're tested, correct?
And most of the most of the, if not all of the locations that they are traveling to require testing before they come, much the same way that we require testing to come to Wrangell and follow our mitigation. So those students are testing before they go. We are testing on the way back too, but with a 5-day gap, they would be unable to travel because they could not practice.